everybody, and welcome to Creative Therapy Umbrella, the place where we talk about lots of different creative arts therapies and expressive therapies. We dive into so many different topics. We touch on play therapy, drama, music, art, dance, and a lot of really cool creative approaches. If you are not following us on Instagram, it's a great place to get updates on new information that we put out and to join in on our Would You Rathers that usually go up on Sundays, which are a lot of fun. And they're actually where I pull the questions from for our guests. Also, always feel free to send me one yourself if you have a good therapy-related Would You Rather. I love hearing them from listeners. So Instagram is a great place to find us. Also, if you haven't checked out our website yet, it's a great place for additional resources too. And there you can find tons of different interventions, different blog posts, and there's also the newsletter if you want to sign up for that also for a bonus intervention sent to you monthly. On today's episode, I talk with Andrea Vargas. She's a licensed mental health counselor and a registered play therapy supervisor. We dive into a little bit about play therapy, a lot of cool stuff about sand play, and she also talks about this really cool training that she's done. It's a therapeutic touch kind of a program. It's called First Play, and it's really interesting. So we ended up talking a lot about the importance of touch for children with medical trauma, with a variety of trauma, and it was just a really, really cool conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy, and I will talk to you on the other side. Okay, Andrea, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to talk today. You have such amazing, I loved hearing your story on Instagram. You've got some really great stories and your website has some really great stuff. And talking about play, Santre, your first play training, I think we're going to have so many great things to dive into today.
Good. I'm excited.
Yes, me too. Okay, so we're going to start first with our Would You Rather. This one was sent in by Angela from Facebook. So she wanted to know if would you rather clean up a bottle of spilled glitter or write treatment plans for an afternoon?
I will definitely pick the glitter. I'm so over treatment plans and paperwork. So glitter will be my choice, definitely.
I totally feel you on that one. I think I put this one out on Instagram not too long ago to for everybody to answer. And I think this was one that kind of like toggled back and forth where like it would be, oh, everyone wants glitter. Oh, no. And then everyone went down to treatment plans and it kind of went back and forth. And I can't remember what it landed on, but it was definitely a tough one for a lot of people. But I would totally agree with you. I have to really like get myself focused to sit down and do treatment plans.
Yeah.
And I feel like cleaning up glitter, like sand, like we were talking about, is like par for the course.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. Well, can you tell us a little bit about what you currently do at your current practice?
Okay. So I'm a registered play therapist. So I specialize in kids between the ages of 3 and 12. I also do see teenagers and some college students, helping them with the adjustment to college and then the teenagers, you know, just teenage stuff that happens. And then I also have this special program that I offer, mothers or caregivers with infants from 0 to 2, which is the first play. And this is kind of a branch under developmental play. It is by Dr. Janet Courtney, and it's basically a therapeutic storytelling massage. So we know that touch is super important, especially in infants. So this program offers an opportunity for either a new mom or newly adopted parents or mothers with like postpartum depression, or maybe just, you know, any mother that would want to learn a activity to do with their infant to strengthen attachment and bonding, and then all the benefits of a therapeutic massage. And then with the storytelling aspect, it helps, you know, just build that language already from that tiny. And just the first play is kind of, when we think about play therapy, it starts at 3, but then first play are those things that we do with infants, you know, the singing, just the playful, like the peekaboo and all these things that babies, you know, respond to and are so, so important for them. So it's a fun, you know, activity to teach caregivers and watch them do it with their babies is so, so cute. So I don't actually touch the baby. I have my own infant-sized doll. And it's so funny because sometimes the babies are literally like the same size as the doll. And then they turn over and they look at like, what is wrong with that baby? And this is and so I demonstrate the massage on the doll, and then the mother or the caregiver will do it, will practice on the baby. So it's really cool.
Wow. That is so, so cool. I appreciate that so much. I work with a bunch of massage therapists, and they're specialized in pediatric massage therapy. And I never realized until I started working there, we work with a lot of children who've had medical trauma from different medical diagnoses. They're in and out of the hospital, lots of procedures. So that therapeutic touch is so incredibly important. But now that I've kind of gone down that road, I've read more about, like, I think I was reading Bruce Perry's book, the one, the dog, the boy who was raised as a dog, and seeing in there the importance of touch and how much between that age of like 0 to 3, like that touch is where like learning happens. Yes. And it's so cool to have a program like that where you can specialize in supporting that bond between caregiver and child.
Definitely. And I'm glad you brought up the medical trauma, because that's another, like another population that this can help with, and the preemies, right? A lot of parents, they don't get to touch their baby because they spend time in the NICU, and even bringing the baby home, they're so tiny, they're so fragile. So parents kind of maybe avoid touching them so much, and they're the ones that need it the most, because they're that age or that phase is so, so important. Mm-hmm. So teaching them how to do it in a nurturing and in a cute way, I think it's
I can only imagine the cuteness overload. Yeah. I used to teach classes. They were caregiver-based classes. They were like music development classes, kind of like Mommy and Me, but we were focusing on coming from like that developmental lens of supporting the bond between parent, caregiver. Sometimes it was sibling and younger child. And I loved it because it was the same where I didn't do any of the, I wasn't touching, I wasn't rocking, I wasn't dancing with the babies, or that they were usually between, like under 3, but being able to see the growth in both parent and caregiver and child was like, it's just an amazing place to be when you're that facilitator and teaching movement things, you know, peekaboo, all those really cute things. And beyond adorable too.
Right. So cute.
That is so awesome. I feel like that's such an interesting place, especially for with play therapy, with that average age of like 3 starting, there's that space between 0 and 3 that's so important to have those bonds and to support that.
Right. Because the more, you know, the more we read about attachment, the younger and younger and younger. And even like there's research even in utero and even like at conception. I mean, it's like goes all the way back.
Yeah. And attachment is so important with those pieces. And then too, I think that brings, you know, up, you know, children who are adoptees where in, and it might be in that age bracket, that 0 to 3, if they're an adoptee or, you know, if there's been medical trauma, you know, some of the children that I've worked with, unfortunately, that's where the most of medical trauma has happened.
Right,
and that's such a great way to get in there and support both parent and child.
Yeah. They, Dr. Courtney also has another program that for children that are older than 0 to 2. Mm-hmm. And what she does is she wrote a story called Magic Rainbow Hug, if I'm not mistaken. And it's basically what she calls a backstory. So the child faces away from the parent, and the parent will do the story with a massage on the back. So again, it's that caring, nurturing touch with a story. And it's nice to teach. I mean, I have the book and I'll teach it, but I know she goes more into more of an like extensive training for that. But it's also really cool and an opportunity to do it with kids that are older. And kids, you know, again, with medical trauma or anxiety, or, you know, maybe to do it right before bed to kind of soothe them. So it's really cool.
That is awesome. I'm going to make sure to link both of those in the show notes too for listeners. Janet, her stuff and the Magic Rainbow Hug, I'll put those in there because those are great, really great resources, I think, to check out.
Yeah.
And I feel like they are so applicable to a lot of populations.
Yes,
you know, there's so many different trauma, even just supporting bonding, you know, for, you know, if there isn't any trauma, is just such a great thing to have a tool as a parent, as a caregiver to have. It's a great thing to engage in.
And there's a big movement on getting touch to be okay, because for a while, because of, you know, what I was reading was that due to there being the news, you know, when that came up, we were hearing so much about these horrible things happening to kids. So everyone was just so scared to touch a child. But nowadays, we're noticing so many kids need touch. And actually, I just saw an article about there's like professional cuddlers that cuddle with adults, right? And there's like, the article is about men and cuddling. And
wow.
How important, you know, how that piece is missing so much in our society now that we're hiring people to cuddle with other people. Yeah.
Yes. I feel like I've heard that. I have a feeling it was on a podcast that was like a comedy podcast or something. But it is so interesting. And I would wonder too, with that, is it higher rates of men looking for that because there's such a difference, you know, with, I think that's something that's also changing where we're encouraging boys at, you know, younger ages and to fully feel those feelings and have the space to feel those feelings where, traditionally, that's not always where it's gone. I'd be really interested in seeing if there's a difference with that or the histories of people who are seeking that and really need that and what has been in their background, what's happened.
Definitely. And I'm sure it's done very confidential. Mm-hmm. So they might feel safer that way.
Totally.
You know, to have that. So very interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. Yeah, that therapeutic touch. I think I had talked with one of a dance therapist, I think, before about therapeutic touch in how we're very afraid of that. But I love how what you were talking on, how you're supporting caregivers to get in there and do and be a part of that therapeutic touch too, you know, and it's not just that, it's something that generalizes out of the session so much that the therapy keeps going.
Right. And another thing about Janet Courtney's program is it talks about asking permission, right? Asking and teaching kids that their body belongs to them and what is a nurturing, caring touch. Because if we only teach kids about bad touch, but then we don't show them what a good touch is, then, you know, that can be very confusing and setting them up for maybe a situation where they're not going to really understand what this touch is. Maybe the touch does feel good because they haven't had another touch, you know, mm-hmm. that was a safer touch. So
yes, really cool. Yeah. Because if you don't have that dichotomy of good touch versus bad touch, it all becomes blurry. You know, mm-hmm. like how can you know the difference? And
right.
Yeah. I love that asking permission too. That's a mm-hmm. big thing. I know with the work at the company that I do with so much medical trauma, like it's always giving that opportunity to have control, especially mm-hmm. when you're bringing the body into it.
Yes,
and we even do that with music of, you know, would you rather play this drum with your hands or would you rather have a mallet? Because a mallet might feel a little bit safer, that the feeling of something might just be too much. Or mm-hmm. Some kids want to, you know, sit on a drum or lay on it. But, you know, some kids are just, they're not ready to go there yet. And having that, giving that permission that it's your body and we can go about this how you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I read something about, patients who were in the hospital and received a massage, I think that it increased their outcome or they just, or something like that. Like, I can't remember exactly, but it was like, you know, even for adults, you know, to have a masseuse come and massage them, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love it. We have a really great massage team. And it's so cool to hear, we a lot of times will have clients that we will both serve. And when we're touching base about that client, hearing the progress from massage, and sometimes it's very like literal of the client had a bowel movement today, like, all right, you know, but then sometimes it's like, this client, you know, allowed me to be in their space and sit next to them for 20 minutes today, mm-hmm. which hasn't happened in the, I don't know, however many months we've been seeing them. And like those, that progression of your personal space, allowing somebody to come in, having that touch and growing from that is, it's amazing.
It is. It's beautiful.
Yes. Definitely. Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really interested in what brought you to play therapy and Santray and First Play. What kind of got you motivated to dive into this type of therapy?
Well, ever since I could remember, I wanted to work with kids. I remember being about 10 years old and then picking up a book on child abuse at a store while my mom was shopping. And I started reading it. And I don't know, it overwhelmed me. Like, I'm Hispanic and my mom, you know, did spank me, but it was never abuse. So I had no idea that, you know, to the level where it could go. And I remember being 10 and just wondering like what would happen to those kids after. And so I started, I was a little bit of a nerd. So every time there was a project to do, I would do it on child abuse. And then obviously the piece of psychotherapy and psychology kept coming up. So I put my mind to, I want to study child psychology. And when I was in grad school, we had the opportunity to start doing our practicum and the University of Miami has their counseling center for the community and they have a playroom. So I knew I wanted to work with kids. I knew I wanted to do psychology. I'm already almost done with my master's in mental health. And I got my first client and I took him to the playroom. He was in kindergarten and he was having a hard time, you know, behaving in class. So I just figured, let me set up a kindergarten classroom with all the stuffed animals and all the puppets and let's role play what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And it was so much fun, you know, acting out the kid who doesn't sit still, the kid that talks too loud, and the kid that doesn't talk. And then we would play and it was so much fun. And we were recording it and I showed it to my supervisor. She looks at me and she's like, you know, that's play therapy. And I'm like, wait, that's like a thing? Like, I can do that? Like, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
And it worked because he did learn new behaviors and it was so cool. So I started working for a not-for-profit agency in Miami. And Lisa Saldana was the trainer there. And she had like a 12-week series for play therapy. And And then after that, that's what I focused on, just getting all my hours in, all my supervision. And my goal was to be a registered play therapist. Took me a really long time, but I did it.
And
play therapy is just, it just makes sense. Like, yeah, to me, it doesn't make sense to sit on the sofa with a child and ask them questions. Like, doesn't make any sense. Then the more that I read about children and attachment, you know, the younger and younger we understand, it's so important to look at that early attachment with their parents, because that's everything. Mm-hmm. Attachment in the relationship is everything.
Yeah. So, and that element of safety of, you know, knowing that you are safe. And you get that by relationship, you know, and that if that's not there, if that's broken, if it's wobbly for some reason, then it's going to change.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah.
And that's then the sand tray, I think it was my supervisor for the play therapy hours. He had a sand tray and I was like, that's so cool. I mean, it's just so cool. Like, what kid doesn't want to play in the sand? I mean, it's so cool. So,
I feel like even as an adult, I'm like, I just want to spend an hour in the sand tray myself and just put all these fun things in them. And then collecting the pieces of when I first saw a room that had all of the miniatures, I was like, this is so cool. And it's so much fun now. I feel like looking at all of them, like going to the dollar store and then being like, there's five of them here that I can add to. These are so great. And
It's so funny because my son knows already that that's what mommy looks for. So he is not the person you want to go shopping with, because he's like, you can get this one and you really need this one, mommy. And I'm like, daddy's not going to be happy. I need to get this off the cart.
You're like, no, I had to stop at those ones. Don't keep encouraging me.
Yeah. The worst is Target. Like that Target dollar
section. It's the
worst. Sometimes I have to pass and like just keep going. Just keep going. Don't look.
Yep. Don't even tempt. I can't tempt myself.
Yeah.
So can you tell for our listeners, because we haven't had anyone who's spoken on sand tray at all.
Okay.
Can you kind of explain maybe the difference between play and sand tray, or what sand tray might facilitate that more traditional play therapy might not target?
Okay. Well, let me first explain that there's sand play and then sand tray. Awesome. So sand play is, I think it's more specific. I mean, they have a lot of like specifics on how to do it. The tray has to be a certain size. There's like, so that was more specific. So sand tray is not as regulated, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And you can use it in a variety of ways. The way that I use it is a little bit more directive. So there's miniatures, which are, you know, little objects. They're usually on display so that the child it can be used with teenagers and adults so that they can they can visually see them and access them. And then you can make it very non-directive by just telling them to create a tray, whatever they want, and then they just kind of look through the miniature that you might have, and then whatever just calls to them, then they do. Or you can be more directive, like maybe working with like a family, you can do it that way. You can say, all right, instead of just maybe tell me a little bit about yourself. No, pick a miniature that describes mom, or pick a miniature that describes dad, make a tray about your school or something. You just get a lot of information that way, especially for kids who don't necessarily want to talk. With teenagers, sometimes they look at you weird. I mean, it is weird. I tell them, this is weird. I'm asking you to play in sound. Yeah, that's weird, but go with it. just try it out.
Yeah.
And with adults as well. So it's part of play therapy, but it just gives you maybe more of like a container to do it in, right? And then it's very tactile, because it's very grounding. And even kids who don't necessarily want to put the miniatures in there, they can regulate themselves with the sand. And sometimes when you do play therapy with little ones, they'll go to the sand tray, but they're not really doing sand tray work. It's more like an extension of play therapy. It's just they're playing in the sand. So I don't know. It's just really cool. It's really cool. I don't know what else to say. You got to try it.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like it is so, it's so interesting to see what comes out when somebody mm-hmm. just starts kind of diving into the sand. And, mm-hmm. you know, if it's just that using two hands of playing with it or just mm-hmm. pouring it for like that regulation piece and how calming that could be.
Yes.
I didn't realize it either, especially because the sand is so like, it's so fine mm-hmm. and just feels like it feels so good.
It does.
Playing in there and
yeah.
Feeling it for yourself. And mm-hmm. then as I've been learning about it, I've had like more experiential pieces where mm-hmm. it'll be like, okay, let's bring family members in. Like, mm-hmm. let's talk about your family and do a sand tray about your family. Mm-hmm. And I remember like going over to these miniatures and thinking in my mind, like, okay, as a, like if a client, you know, does it, how do they pick? What is it like? And I landed on this one and I was like, that's my brother. Like, it was just like so instant yeah. where I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even have to think about it.
Uh-huh.
And then in that moment I was like, oh, that's what it yes. is. Like, it's yes, just those yes. things like uh-huh. somehow represent the thing that you're going for. Mm-hmm. And it just happens.
Right. Right. And in trauma, we know that trauma where it lies in the brain, and then talking about it will pull it out of that imagery, visual, implicit, place that that's where the trauma lies. So with the miniature, with the sand, you can go a lot deeper. I'll give you an example. We had a tragedy happen in our community, and my husband hadn't ever done sand tray, and he always helps me with like putting things up in my office or whatever. And I tell him, I'm like, try it out, do something. So he stands there and he ended up doing a tray. And as we looked at it, it was a tray about the tragedy that had happened. And he was like, that is so weird. Like, I wasn't even trying to go there. And he really wasn't. I asked mm-hmm. him, so how was the process? Does he pick like superheroes? But the way the superheroes were positioned, they were in a circle. And then there was like it was a community coming together for a tragedy that happened. And he was like, and he did it in like 5 minutes. So it didn't have to be this whole thing. And I wasn't trying to analyze him, but it was just like, what is that about? He's like, oh, I guess it's about the thing that happened in our community. You know, he's like, okay, this is really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so cool.
You don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. It'll go there. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I feel like has been really interesting too, of seeing how kids will, it's like you're not like pushing. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like there's not kind of like this space where you're like, so tell me about your medical trauma history.
Right.
It's like, let's do this sand, you know, like we'll play in the sand. And then it's like all the medical equipment comes in, the ambulance mm-hmm. drives in. And yeah. even if they're like secondary pieces, it's still yeah. like they become important elements. And
right.
It's interesting how it goes there without yeah. needing the prompt to go
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you can even see the changes in the tray and then the stories, because a lot of kids, what they'll do is they'll tell a story mm-hmm. and sometimes they'll involve me in it, sometimes they just forget I'm there and then they're just there, and then sometimes the bad guys are maybe contained into, you know, behind a fence, or maybe they're covered, or maybe there's less bad guys, or maybe some new good guys come in. So it's just them processing and figuring out how to cope with their, you know, their stuff. And it's so cool, because then you can look at the picture. I'll take a picture of it, put it in their electronic file, and just looking at them. I remember I had one client that literally took, we were talking about how you have to be present and you can't think about the mess or anything like that as they're doing this. He literally took almost like, I would say 75% of my miniatures and shoved them inside the tray. And it was like overflowing with that. And it was just, think about how that child is feeling, that they needed to.
Chaos.
It was so chaotic.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And needing that. And I remember one of the first books I read about it was Images of Resiliency, that has pictures of sand trays, of the progressions of sand trays in it. And I think like half of the first sand trays were that. They were just dumped. Like it was like somebody just took their arm and swiped everything into it. And then to see the development of their sand trays, and by the end how organized they were, and how much more of a story and like empowerment, I think is the word that always pops up in my mind, of you can see it.
Definitely. And then you see the kids who are like super anxious, the ones that take every little one and they look at it and they position it and they change it, and then they just, or they line everything up in the straight lines. I mean, you can even just tell how anxious they are and how much they need to control. It's just so fascinating.
So what does, for like an anxious child who's working in the sand, what does their progression typically look like when they're making progress through
They're the just sand more trace? Flexible. They're more free. There's less rigidness in the tray. It's just more, okay, I'm going to put that there and I'm okay with that, and I don't have to position it 5 different times. Or I don't need to line up the tray with fences, you know, anymore. Maybe I can have a door. Maybe I can just close that door and it won't have to be so, so divided or so, it's just,
I love that example of the fences versus a door. So, and I think too, something I never realized until I started reading more and learning more about sand trays, how important like the symbolism of everything is, of the differences between a fence and a door, and how, you know, a fence can be really closed off and separating and a boundary, but a door opens, you know, allows for more space or for possibility.
Yeah. And even the kind of fence, right? There's some fences, I have some fences that have barbed wire and some that look more, I guess, like nicer. So, and sometimes how many fences they use, like you can, like some kids will put like 3 and like, man, you really don't want anyone to go there, you know? And if they open it up a little bit, or maybe they add a bridge or something like that.
It's so cool. I love that, the symbolism in that, in how it, you know, I think with children through their, like their development of play, is where, when that symbolic play starts to develop, like that's just, they're doing that with their life. It's really, you know, the experiences that they've had, that's what they're working through.
And it's safer to do it that way for them, right? So then you're not, you know, sometimes I'll even do it with like stories, and I'll just make up a story for them that's similar to what they're going through, but it's about a bear. And then in the middle of the story, they just look at me like, wait a minute, that's kind of like me. Really? You don't say? Oh, okay.
No way. That step, one step removed, where it's like, I don't have to be so intensely talking about me, but we can have this kind of third party in the room that can take that energy. And I remember having that happen a lot with, doing like songwriting with some kids, or where it can be pretty intensive if it's so direct and one-on-one, but they might have a stuffed animal in the room. And this is where I really got interested in play therapy, of like, oh, well, okay, so what does, you know, what does the rabbit want to do for this? And like, oh, the rabbit definitely wants this to be a fast song. And it's like so much easier, this conduit that like those things can go through, and you can look at the rabbit instead of having to look at, you know, the child, and just make it less intense, I guess.
Right. And I love the one where you like whisper, like, what are they going to do now? They're gonna do this, okay, but what's going on? And then they're just like, some of the kids are like, why are you whispering? I'm like, I don't want them to know.
I do that all the time, of like, I don't know, if is it breaking the fourth wall or something? I feel like it's where you're like, oh wait, I forgot, are they friends with this person who showed up, or no? And then some kids are so like, oh yeah, and then some are like, wait, what?
They come out, they just look at you like, what is wrong with you? Why are you whispering to me?
Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
But it really is. I feel like it's so effective. Like the growth that comes from that and the information that comes out is astonishing.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then just in the playroom, I've gotten handcuffed. I've gotten shot at. I've had so many sword fights and superhero. I mean, it's so funny.
Yes. Yeah. So much superhero stuff. Uh-huh. I feel like all the Avengers movies and all of that. It was, I have watched them many times so that I can learn the plot line to know of like, are we going along with this plot line or is this child bringing in something else that, you know, we need to go somewhere else or.
Right. It's always good to keep up to date on all that.
I know. It's like self-care of like, I have to watch 5 Marvel movies today. So that's awesome. So in the playroom, like you were saying, you've had all these, you know, sword fights and all these intense moments. And I wonder if you could tell us about like those, what happens in those moments when like if it's aggressive play or like that kind of fighting kind of stuff, what does that mean in play therapy?
Well, kids who play out aggressive, when they have, maybe they're frustrated or maybe they just want some type of control. Maybe there's someone in their life that's being aggressive with them and they want to kind of retaliate. So it's interesting to see how empowered they feel when they're able to take down the bad guy. And it's always fun, obviously, for me to be on their team and not me be the bad guy. Like, you can be on my team. I'm like, oh, thank you. I'm so tired. I'm so tired of being the bad guy. But it's, and just giving them the, you know, reflecting the feeling like, wow, you know, no matter what the good guy tries to do, the bad guy just keeps winning. And then they're just like, yeah, that's so not fair. And I'm like, I know, you know, and then again, the play will continue from, and it's so fascinating how they just like, okay, remember we did this, and they just start handing me this stuff. Okay, so now we're going to do it like this. I'm like, okay, and then the next session. All right, so this time we don't need this because, you know, and it's just from one session to the other. Something that I think parents, I wonder, like, am I just paying this lady to play with my kid? And it's like, no, there's so much more going on there, believe me.
Yes.
That education piece for parents is important.
Yeah. So what does that look like to, cause I feel like I'm like, if somebody like looking in on this, it's like, I'm playing superhero, we're, you know, choosing all this superhero music to go with, you know, this thing we're acting out. And like, it's, I could understand how someone can easily look at it and be like, you're just playing, you know, like you're playing superheroes. So how does that advocacy and that education look like for your parents?
Yeah, I talk to them about just so adults, when they're going through something, what do adults do? They call their family, they call their friend, they might, I don't know, journal, they might go out for exercise. But what do kids do? Kids play. That's how they process all that. That's how they express themselves. They try out new coping mechanisms. That's just it. So myself as a therapist, I have to meet them where they are, and help and kind of enter their world that way. And so yeah, it's not just playing. It's like offering them the therapeutic space. Like, I'm there with them. Whatever it is that you need me to do. You want me to hide behind the sofa while you shoot at me? All right, that's what we're going to do. That's what you need. Whatever, you know, and sometimes as we're doing it, I might not always know why we're doing it. But later I'm driving home like, oh, that's what it is, you know?
I feel like I've had that happen also where something is happening in the session, we're playing. And I, as you said, hiding behind the couch, I had a similar experience where I was put behind the couch and we were in school and I was like, what is going on? This is so different from our play. We've never gone here before. And then afterwards, parents were talking about, like shooter drills. And I was like, ah, now I see. Like in my mind, I was trying to like pull all these things of like where this could go. And I was like, okay. And then that's also helpful too in talking with parents of like, this happened today where I was wondering what happened. And now that you're giving me this information, this makes more sense. And that kind of gives them that window into how that play is processing. Like we're processing what happened.
Right. At times with the child permission, and sometimes kids are very excited to show their parent their sand tray. And sometimes the parent will just look at me like, oh, so guess which one you are, right? So it's really cool. And then that's when they get it, right? When they can see it sometimes.
I love those moments too with parents when like you can broaden that understanding and that education piece of, you know, this is what it looks like. This is what it might mean. And it's exciting when parents are excited about it and they're like, oh, like I knew they were getting something from this. They always want to come. They get excited about, you know, being here, but seeing how this is helpful, seeing that moment click for parents is so exciting.
Yeah. And including the parents. Like I remember I could look back on a session where, I mean, it was full play therapy. I mean, from the minute he got there, it was just play. And he invited his mom and, his mom was great. His mom was following his lead. And she was like sweating by the end. And she's like, okay, now I get it. This is a lot of work.
So much work. That is awesome. I feel like to have parents who are willing to jump in like that and like get in and like get in there and get dirty, you know, and just like do all the stuff and climb on board and follow the child. That's amazing.
Yeah. And even giving that as a homework assignment, like just play more with your kid, 15 minutes, just undivided attention. Yes. You know, I had this one family did it. The child was making comments at school about guns or whatever, but it wasn't about that. It was just his way of, feeling safe and protecting himself. And his mom had taken away all his Nerf guns. I'm like, no, that has nothing to do with it, right? So I encouraged the Nerf gun war at home with him and his parents, and they had so much fun. And it wasn't an aggressive thing. It was it became fun, a way for them to connect. It was so, I mean, I have Nerf gun fights at my house all the time. It's annoying to pick up those little, they find them everywhere.
So thankful for having glasses because of Nerf gun fights. I never realized, I was like, I've got shield protectors because they're just flying everywhere and it is so much fun. And I love how that, like the element of safety is why, you know, like what you were saying that, you know, guns maybe made that child feel safe. And then exploring that play with parents of like, it maybe it's not aggressive or it's maybe about safety, control, like those other things and not just aggression.
Yeah. And then offering them a space to connect with the child so that he does feel safe.
Yeah.
And then decreasing his need for protecting himself as much, right? And then making aggressive comments or whatever because he's feeling more safe at home and feeling more connected.
I think like that piece too of like allowing that, you know, and encouraging the Nerf gun play is encouraging the parent to like accept the child where they are, which provides safety of, you know, then that child feels safe of like, oh, this part of me isn't being shut out. It's being honored. And that makes me feel more safe and protected. And what do you do for your own self-care for the, because I think we all, so many of us have clients that they really push those boundaries. They do that stuff where they give you that eye of like, I'm going to go drop this. What are you going to do? And it's really hard for us. Like that takes a lot of energy. You know, we can do it in the session, but then at the end of the day, we're depleted. Do you do anything to help fill that cup?
I probably don't do as much as I should. But sometimes I do my own sand tray. at the end.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's fun. I mean, how can you not? The miniatures are just staring at you like. Sometimes yeah. I do that, or sometimes as I'm picking up the mess, like I'll put music on, and it's just kind of I'll take that opportunity to maybe even dust a little bit, just to kind of refresh the office space, and I think that helps to kind of it keeps you busy and it regulates. Listen to the music, right?
Yes, as you're doing it.
And then just reflecting on that session, like, wow, he was testing me, or he's been testing, or he's just been showing me how out of control he's been feeling, and little by little it's getting better.
Yeah.
I actually got excited when he only dropped it once. I'm like, there's no more. Oh, this is so good.
This is so much progress. Like,
where do I start? My room is upside down. So that was cool.
That is awesome. And I love those little pieces of things to do that are grounding, they're regulating, they can kind of keep you, even if you have to do that between a session, you know, sometimes if it's listening to music or doing a quick sand tray or something where you're like, okay, I've got to regulate out of that space, process it now or later, and then like move on, and I can come back to it. And then I feel like it does get exciting because you can see that progress with like clear vision at that time. Yeah. That's awesome. Exciting. I love that. Well, this has been so awesome, Andrea. I have so many resources. I'm going to link to Janet Courtney's stuff and the Magic Rainbow Hug. I'm going to link to some sand play and sand tray stuff as well. Is there anything else you would point listeners to, or any great resources that you love that you want to share with listeners?
For more on play therapy, the Association for Play Therapy. What else? There's a manual on sand tray therapy. I just can't remember the name, but it's a good start to kind of understand more about sand tray, and it just gives you like a good foundation. I just can't remember the name. Maybe I'll email it to you.
That would be great, because then I'll link it right in there. Yeah. It'll be linked as well. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Those are so great. We covered so many awesome things, and I feel like this is just, there's so many great resources for anybody who's listening for play, sand tray. There's just so much. So this has been so wonderful.
Yay, yes. I'm so glad that we were able to do this.
Me too. Thanks so much for being on.
Okay. All right. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I had never heard about First Play or the storytelling massage that Andrea talks about until talking with her today. And it was so cool to hear about it. I love how much it values the importance of touch. And it was just so cool to learn about. I was beside myself after this interview. So don't forget to check the show notes and go follow Andrea. Check out all the cool stuff that she's doing. Also, you can follow us too as well on Instagram. And we also have a Patreon page as well. If you haven't and you have a quick minute, you can subscribe, leave us a review, or rate us on iTunes. That always helps us out big time. So any of those things would be awesome. But thank you guys so much for listening today, and be creative.